Hey y'all, I'm Carrie.
Hey y'all, I'm Mandy.
And this is Monstrous. This episode contains topics and language that may not be suitable for all listeners, and topics that may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised. Hey y'all, before we get into today's episode, I wanted to come on here. I know many of you have already listened to this episode. It was brought to our attention by one of our listeners that I misspoke. I mistakenly gave you the wrong nickname for Abby. So that has been fixed. So if you have already listened to this episode, the only thing that has changed is Abby's name is Abigail Joyce Williams, and she went by Abby. Libby, her full name is Liberty Rose Lynn German, and she went by Libby. I wanted to get down here and make that clarification. That has been changed inside the episode, but if you are seeing this once again on your feed, that is the only thing that has been changed in the episode. Everything else is the same. We apologize for that mistake, and we want to thank the listener on our YouTube that brought that to our attention so we had the opportunity to fix it. And if there are any further mistakes that we make or anything that we do need to clarify in the future, we greatly appreciate our listeners bringing that stuff to our attention so we have the opportunity to fix it and clarify that. So again, thank you to our listener on YouTube that brought this to our attention. And now for today's episode.
I can't get it to where it's comfortable.
Right.
Well, for everyone that doesn't know, I fucked up my knee. Yay.
I know, right?
So trying to sit comfortably is not fun. Okay. Anyway. Anything new, Mandy, before we get into it?
No.
You got any new TV shows or movies, books, anything?
I've been watching Love is Blind.
Love is Blind. Oh, yeah. I've seen a couple episodes of that. I never really got into it, though.
Where they don't see each other until they get married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really good.
I've watched a few episodes. I think, like, the first, like, three episodes, I think, is what I watched.
Really? I like it.
Yeah. I watched She the People. I think I told you about that the other day. You have to watch that show.
I know, I need to.
Oh, it's so good. It's only, like, six episodes, but it is so good.
I gotta watch it.
Yeah, it's really good. And then, have you watched You on Netflix yet?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I love that show. I have not watched the new season. Have you watched it?
No, I haven't watched the new season yet.
I cannot wait to watch the new season.
I know.
I love that show. Love it. Have you seen Jenny and Georgia on Netflix?
No.
Oh, you have to watch it. It's so good. And they're getting ready to drop a new season.
I have to watch that one too.
Yep. You'll have to get caught up on that one. It's so good. You'll like that one. Okay. Oh, have you seen the trailers for the Megan 2.0?
Yes, and I want to watch it.
I want to see it. It's not scary. Like, at least the first one wasn't. It wasn't scary. It was just like, oh, fuck.
Suspenseful.
Exactly. And with all this AI and the robots and shit nowadays, you're like, oh, shit.
Right. It's crazy.
But I want to see Megan 2.0. It looks really good. There was another movie coming out this year, but I can't, now that I'm trying to tell you, I can't think of what it was that I wanted to see. Dang it. I think it was a scary movie.
They got a lot that's supposed to be coming out.
Was it Scream that was supposed to come out this year, or was that last year?
I think a new Scream is coming out.
Because I believe I seen something that they were making a new Scream, and what's his name? Not Billy, but the one that played, if Logan was here, Logan would be screaming at me right now. Is it Scotty? Billy and Scotty?
I don't know.
I've seen that movie 100 fucking times. Now I can't remember his name. Michael. He's played by Michael.
Hmm.
The guy that plays Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah.
Michael something.
Yeah.
Him. But I heard his character is supposed to be coming back.
Oh, that would be a good one.
Mm-hmm. Have you watched his new show, his cake show?
No.
Oh, it's called Killer Cakes.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah. Logan and I watched the first episode. So good. The cakes are badass.
Oh, I bet they are.
Oh, yeah. It's on Netflix. I think it's on Netflix.
It's either Netflix or Prime Video. You'll have to watch it. It is so good. It's horror-themed cakes.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah. In the first one, they had one cake that, like, jumps up at the judges. Another one, like, spews fake blood out. It's awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah. You'll have to watch it. You'll like it. Okay. Anyway. Enough of that to why everybody's here. So, this is our first full-length official Friday bonus episode of the month. After this episode, every month you will get a bonus episode on the last Friday of the month.
Awesome.
Yep. Fun stuff. Okay, anyway. So our case today is one that nearly every American knows about. This was a heavily followed case here in the U.S., and last year it once again hit the headlines. You know I love cold cases. Many find it odd, but, like, all these cases that we cover are awful, okay? They all deserve justice, but I feel that the unsolved cases, I think, give us hope that maybe our justice system, although it needs improvement because it's fucking broken, that maybe they'll get it right, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, woof. So, like with Lyric Cook Morrissey and Elizabeth Collins case earlier this week, our case today was never considered cold, even though there weren't answers. But unlike their case, this case was eventually closed and justice was served. So today, we are going to dive into the double murder of Abigail Williams and Liberty German, most widely known as the Delphi murders. So this case, of course, had a large impact on their family and the community as a whole. But also the entire nation. By now, both girls would have grown into teenagers and become young women. The loss of both girls means their families were not only robbed of their children, but also all the milestones that comes with this time in their lives and those that follow. We have quite a few international listeners, and I'm not sure how much they know about the girls or the case, so I hope that I'm able to capture the impact that the death of Abigail and Liberty had on their family and our nation, for them and anyone here in the U.S. that does not know much about the case. So I myself followed the case from the time it became such big news, all the way to its end. But when Andrew Iden and Barbara MacDonald released their deep dive podcast called Down the Hill on August 4th of 2023 is when I really became invested in it. Which, it is such a good podcast. Each episode is spent laying out the case in detail from the very beginning all the way to the end. So it's only about this case specifically. So I suggest everybody to go listen to it because it is so good. So with all the coverage this case has gotten over the years, it has ensured that the girls will never be forgotten by anyone. So for those that do not know them, let's meet the girls. Liberty Rose Lynn German, who went by Libby, was born December 27th of 2002, so she is 14 years old at the time of our case. Abigail Joyce Williams, known as Abby, was born on June 23rd of 2003 and is 13 at the time of our case. In 2017, the girls lived in Delphi, Indiana. Delphi is a small farming town with about 3,000 residents and is about 70 miles northwest of Indianapolis. This community is considered to be relatively safe, where everyone knows everyone and no one locks their doors. Both girls were in eighth grade at Delphi Community Middle School, and they were the best of friends. They both loved art and softball, while Abby also had a love for volleyball. And both played the saxophone in the school band. Abby was known for her smile and was always making a craft for someone. At the time of our case today, she had just taken up knitting and found a love for photography. Libby had a love for science and dreamed of becoming a science teacher. She was kind and was known for leaving little post-it notes of love and encouragement for the people in her life. Libby loved to bake and, like her best friend, shared a love for photography. By all accounts, they were both lovely girls and loved being together. On February 12th of 2017, Abby spent the night with Libby. Libby lived with her sister, her father, and grandparents. The next morning, Libby's grandfather took the girls for a pancake breakfast. This day was warm, which is odd for this time in February in Delphi, so the two decided to go for a walk. The girls got ready, and Abby's older sister, Kelsey, dropped them off at the Monon High Bridge Trail, which is about a mile and a half trail that runs from Old Highway 25 to Deer Creek or Delphi, Indiana. This trail is a straight line. It ends on an unofficial section of the Monon High Bridge, which is 63 feet high. It's a railroad bridge, and it stands 60 foot high from the ground, and it crosses over a ravine. So Libby's sister dropped the girls off around 1:30 p.m., and the plan was for Libby's dad, Derek, to then pick the girls up from that same exact spot just a few hours later at 3:30. But when this time came and Derek arrived, the girls were nowhere to be seen. Neither were answering their phones. Once it began to get dark, both families began to panic and then contacted police. That evening, the entire community were out searching, but it just kept getting darker, and they didn't find either of the girls. So initially, no one thought that there had been any foul play. They thought that maybe the girls had gotten lost, or one of them had gotten hurt, or just something simple that could explain them being missing. Because who thinks that their child is missing?
Right.
That was until in the light of day on the following day, so Valentine's Day, that the girls would be found, and it wasn't what everyone had hoped for. Both girls were found dead, and it was clear from the moment they were found that it was a homicide. This case garnered a lot of media attention, but local police were keeping quiet. They had found evidence at the scene, but what they found was not released to the media. Now, as we've said before, police have reasons for doing this. Sometimes they release certain information, while other information they keep close to the vest. And sometimes they don't release anything at all. This is to make sure that the suspect is the right person. As we've said before, they don't want things getting out that's going to jeopardize the case. Now, the girls were found by people within the search party, but they weren't found on the walking trail. The searchers walked along a path that came to an end. So the path just like abruptly stopped. But these searchers continued forward just in case the girls had gotten off the path. The girls were found there off the path about half a mile and then on an adjacent property. Now, at this point, very little was released about the murders, but police quickly released one item. It was a still image taken from a video they had found on Libby's phone, and they believed that the man in this photo was their suspect. This was a grainy image, but it showed a man with a husky build and light blue jeans, a dark blue jacket, kind of like a windbreaker, and what looked to be like a brown hat or maybe a cap with the flaps that go over the ears.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to send you this picture really quick, Mandy.
Okay.
You'll probably recognize the picture. Okay, I just sent that one to you.
Oh, yeah. Kind of blurry.
Yeah, so it's really hard to tell who it is. But this photo was the very first and really the only thing for a while that they released. And it was everywhere. In the picture, he does not appear to be any kind of threat. But something about him made Libby take that photo. And by the end, we will see that it was good that she listened to her gut. So following this, on February 22nd, so a little over a week later, police released another piece of evidence. This time, it was an audio clipping. Hoping that someone would recognize the voice authorities released on the audio clip taken from Libby's phone, where a man says, "Guys, down the hill." This was a chilling reveal. And let me tell you, this clip is just that. Like, it gives you full body chills. So here is the audio clip they released on February 22nd.
Yeah.
And that's all they released. They were hoping that someone would recognize the man's voice and be able to point fingers to someone. Like, it seems like it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, someone just talking. But it just, it is creepy. Because you clearly can tell that this is a much older man.
Right.
And he's telling two young girls down the hill. It's creepy. and it just gives you chills. Ugh. So now the public has this audio clip, this grainy still image to go off of, to point to someone that could be this guy. And by March 1st, there were billboards everywhere with this grainy image on it, asking for help to find him. And it listed a $200,000 reward in any information that led to the capture of this man. But a few months go by, and there are still no suspects. In a plea to the public, Libby's mother asked Indiana to install an orange light on their front porches to commemorate the girls and to indicate that their killer was still out there. Then, on July 17th of 2017, police released the first sketch from an eyewitness that was in the park that day. This sketch was of a white man wearing a cap. He was described as being between 180 to 200 pounds, had reddish brown hair, and he appeared to be in his late 30s or early 40s. I'm going to send this sketch to you. To me, there really isn't anything that sets this guy apart from any other guy with the same build, but tell me what you think. Honestly, to me, he just looks like a weird, creepy old guy.
Oh, he does.
Like, I'm sure everyone has somebody in their family that looks like this guy.
Right.
Just looks like a weirdo. So now, with the release of this sketch, came a flood of tips with possible suspect. Because again, he looks like any other old guy. So one was the owner of the land where the girls were found, which police had already interrogated this guy on because they were found on his land. This man was 77-year-old Ron Logan. Like I said earlier, the path ended on his land. So, of course, he became suspect number one. Ron did have a history of domestic violence, and the tips about this guy came pouring in as who many people thought was the guy in the sketch. Because, according to them, he looked similar to that. The voice on the recording apparently also sounded like him, but when investigators spoke with Ron, he had an alibi that was provided by a family member. However, this alibi was later dispelled because he had actually falsified it by fudging his timeline of his movements that day and had later admitted that he had driven to either the city or the county dump site, which he had not originally told police. So following all of this, they issued a search warrant but found nothing that connected Ron Logan to the crime. He then later died in 2022, leaving behind a ton of questions about his involvement in the murders. Now, it is possible that he wasn't involved in this and the girls being found on his land was just simply bad luck. And I say that because Ron Logan actually had a reason to lie to the police other than being involved. This man was on parole at the time and he wasn't supposed to be driving. There were a few things that he actually was not supposed to be doing, and it turns out that he was doing them. So in the end, police came to the conclusion that his lies weren't about covering up his involvement. They were just trying to keep his violations quiet so he didn't go back to jail. So now with this being realized, they released a second sketch in 2019. This second sketch really didn't look anything like the first one. Like, it looks totally different. It looks like a younger guy with curly hair, which caused the police to update their description of the suspect to be aged between 18 to 40 instead of 30 to 40, which I'm going to send this one to you as well, Mandy.
Okay.
This guy looks nothing like the first sketch, like absolutely nothing. He doesn't look anything like the grainy image of the guy they had released in the beginning. I have no idea where they got this description from. But it is way off compared to the first two images given to the public. Like, way out of left field here. So, there is the second sketch.
Oh, wow. It doesn't look anything like it.
No.
Like, he's not even wearing a hat.
Yeah, he's not wearing a hat. He looks way younger. The guy in the photo is overweight.
Right.
This sketch does not look overweight, and he looks super young. So, no idea where they got this description from, but they did. So following this, the police released a short video of this guy walking on the bridge. This video was the one that they had taken that still image from earlier that I sent you. So by releasing this short video, they had hoped that someone would recognize the way that this guy walked or how he moved and be able to identify him. But that's kind of hard because they're on a bridge, a wooden bridge at that. And when you're on a wooden bridge or railroad tracks, the way you move and your gait kind of changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what they would have garnered from that, but that's what they released. After this, we didn't hear any news, any updates, nothing in the case until 2020, when police interviewed another major suspect. The evening that the girls had gone missing, Libby had been communicating with a young man on social media. This guy was named Anthony Schatz, and although Libby believed he was around her age, this guy was actually 28-year-old Keegan Klein, who was a sexual predator that had been partaking in a catfishing scam to chat with underage girls in order to lure them into sending him explicit photos of themselves.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. This guy lived in Peru, Indiana, which was about 40 miles from Delphi. It turns out that Keegan had planned on meeting Libby, but according to him, that meetup never happened. Before this discovery, Keegan Klein had been on the police's radar, but they didn't have a connection to him or either of the girls. He was just kind of in their sights because he had a previous conviction of child exploitation and child pornography. But that really wasn't a reason to bring him in. But now they had a connection. This was short-lived, though, because it was proven that he was in Vegas at the time of the murders. Not only this, but he was clearly not the guy from the bridge photo because Klein was a very obese man and he was too large to have been the man on the bridge. So, even though this guy was a pig, he wasn't their pig. Klein wasn't the only suspect at this point, though. Brad Holder, the father of a boy that Abby had briefly dated, had allegedly confessed to his ex-wife that he was involved in the crimes.
Oh, shit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow. He had also reportedly made Facebook posts that seemed to mimic some elements of the crime scene. For example, there was a photo of two girls laid side by side with sticks on them, and there was a weird post about real friends and how they help you move the body and never speak of it again.
What the hell?
Yep. Now, his posts were similar to that of a man named Elvis Fields, who lived about 120 miles away in Rushville, Indiana. Fields was interviewed by police after his sister had come forward and said he had confessed to her that he had done something to the girls.
Wow.
At the end of his interview, Fields had asked an Indiana state trooper who was driving him home, quote, "If my spit is found on one of the girls, but I have an explanation for it, would I still be in trouble?"
Well, I have nothing to say.
Yep. Both of these men were reportedly known as Odinists. So have you ever heard of Odinism? I think it's how you say it.
Mm-mm.
Odinism, Odinism, one of the two. Okay. I didn't either. So I had to look it up. So I'm going to briefly explain what it is. So it's a pagan religion that focuses on the worship of the Norse god Odin. This religion is usually associated with white supremacist groups.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So because of this, it was suggested several times that these men had colluded together and the crime was part of an Odinist sacrificial ritual. That's what it is and why they were kind of brought in. And all that. So now suddenly, in 2022, a volunteer clerk found a tip that was originally filed wrong. So basically, this tip had come in early, but was not found until 2022 because of a clerical error.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It, like, do you know how often that happens?
Oh, I bet a lot.
Like, how the fuck? I don't understand. A man named Richard Allen had self-reported that he had been on the trail the day the girls were murdered. According to reports, his wife had encouraged him to report that he had been there to police. And due to the damn clerical error, it had been unfound for 5 years.
That's horrible.
Yep. So 52-year-old Richard Allen was a local to Delphi. He was a husband and father who worked at a CVS in the pharmacy department for many years. He had no criminal record. Richard was brought in for questioning and spoke without a lawyer. He denied any kind of involvement in the murders, but he did admit that he was there on the trail on the day Abby and Libby were killed from about 1:30 to 3:30, which, if you remember, overlaps with the same time the girls were there.
Right.
From here, police get a search warrant. From this search warrant, they find a similar-looking jacket as Bridge Guy, a cap, and a 40-caliber Sig Sauer handgun. This is some pretty light evidence, all circumstantial at best, but at this point, the public had no idea what police knew, so no one believed that Richard Allen could have had any involvement. They believe that they're just grasping at straws at this point. That was until October of 2022, when Richard Allen was arrested for the murders of Abigail Williams and Liberty German. He was held without bail until his trial in October of 2024. So because of the high-profile case, there was a lot that went down in the pretrial period. So before we get into the trial itself, I'm going to tell you about all that because it is important. So first, in December of 2022, Judge Gull issued a gag order that was to be in effect until January of 2023. So this meant that no one could talk to the press or else they were going to be in some big trouble with the courts. So after this, Allen's defense team then made a motion to move the trial out of Correll County, which is the county in which Delphi is in. This was done just because of the concern of the bias that was going on. It's a very small community. Is going to be a tainted jury pool for sure. And thanks to the extensive media attention, it was going to be even harder for him to get a fair trial. So although this guy's a pig and he deserves to be buried under the fucking prison, he does have a right to a fair trial, and that was not going to happen here. Then in October of 2023, Judge Gull removed the two defense attorneys citing gross negligence, and he replaced them with new public defenders. This gross negligence he removed them for was apparently that crime scene photos had been leaked from inside their office.
No way.
Yep, crime scene photos that had not been released to the public. Because up till now, the public literally knows nothing.
Right.
And the public will not find out what happened to the girls. Nothing. Until the trial. Yeah. A former employee of their office had secretly taken a photo of the crime scene photos and then released them, which this person did end up with criminal charges for doing so. But obviously, there's an issue inside your office. Gull claimed that this leak was only one of several ways in which Baldwin and Rozzi had acted with gross negligence. She had also accused them of making false statements. These were her justifications for her decision to remove them. Allen then, of course, appealed the removal of his attorneys to the Indiana Supreme Court, asking that the court do three things. First, to reinstate his original defense team. Then, to replace Judge Gull as the presiding judge. And lastly, to set a speedy trial date within 70 days. This didn't go exactly as Allen wanted. So the decision to keep Judge Gull was unanimous. They did not replace the judge. But they were split on whether or not to reinstate his original attorneys. In the end, they did reinstate them, though. The Indiana Supreme Court said that they did so because, quote, the trial court did not find that their disqualification was a necessary last resort after weighing the prejudices to Allen. So basically, they're saying what they did, although unethical, it didn't cause more prejudice to Allen than it wouldn't in the trial.
Right.
It didn't do anything. So, now the Supreme Court did not allow for a speedy trial, saying that Allen's attorneys had failed to file the paperwork in order to receive that. So, like, that's your fault, my guy.
Right.
So, all this is going on, along with the jury selection and, you know, all the normal trial stuff. From December 2022... until finally on October 18th of 2024, when the long-awaited trial commenced. So the prosecution opened by saying the trial was about three things. The bridge guy, the bullet, and two brutal murders. First, we're going to start with the evidence that surrounds the murders. As we know, the girls had gone for a walk along the Monon High Bridge Trail. Along the way, Libby had taken a photo of Abby crossing the railway bridge and had posted it onto her Snapchat. Shortly after this, something had then prompted Libby to start recording on her phone, which this is the now infamous video of Bridge Guy. In it, you see Abby walking along the bridge with Bridge Guy a ways behind her. You then hear a man's voice say, "Guys," then one of the girls responds, "Hi," and the guy's voice responds, "Go down the hill," which that is the clip that you hear. So I'm going to play this video, Mandy.
So we also want you to hear the end of this video. The girls interacting with someone, presumably Bridge Guy.
Okay. I will post that link on our Facebook page for anybody that wants to see it. But that came out in the trial. The whole clip, they played it in the trial. And it doesn't seem as though the guy had done anything before going down the hill. But something in Libby told her to record. Told her that something was not right. And you can tell by the way the video is that she hit record and it's then just carrying her phone. Okay. And it was it's in my opinion, and many others believe this as well, that it is that feeling that she listened to why we have answers to what happened today.
Right.
Because without that, I don't even think would have had a sketch, an idea of what this guy looked like. Now, it was shortly after this video that both girls were murdered. Next, the prosecution showed photos of the girls' bodies at the crime scene. And of course, this was upsetting to everyone, both in and outside the courtroom. But it was also necessary in this trial. Now, I'm not going to send you or post any photos of the crime scene. But if anyone wants to see them, they are out there. I just don't feel like we need to both describe and show them for everyone to understand how brutal it was. I feel like words are sufficient enough. But they are out there for anyone that wants to see them. So with that being said, I know we put in each episode at the beginning that content warning. But this is brutal. So I want to warn everyone now that I am going to describe the crime scene. So if you want to skip forward, go ahead and do that. We take no offense. We know these cases are hard to listen to, and sometimes it can be too much, especially in cases with children. So we'll put in like a 30-second clip of some kind of, you know, elevator music at the end and the start of the crime scene descriptions. That way everyone knows you're safe to come back. Okay, so for everyone that is still with us, prepare yourselves, because I'm going to go into it. All this came out in the trial. Until then, none of this had been released. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, as ready as you're going to be, right?
Right.
So, both girls were found lying on the ground a few feet apart from each other, and about half a mile upstream from the bridge. Both had huge lacerations on their necks, having their throats cut by their killer. Abby had most likely been killed in the spot where she was found, but testimony from Indiana's crime scene reconstructionist indicated that Libby had been mortally wounded about 20 feet from Abby near a tree, and then moved to the spot where she was found. Libby was found nude with her left hand above her head and her right hand down at her side. She had a lot of blood covering her face and her throat, some of this blood being on at least one of her feet as well. While Abby, who was dressed in Libby's sweatshirt and jeans, lay next to Libby with her right leg slightly bent with her right foot crossed under the left. Both girls were covered by sticks, and Libby had a large tree limb lying across her as well. Abby's missing clothes were later found in a nearby creek. So now before I move on, and we welcome everyone that skipped ahead back, there was no evidence of sexual penetration on either of the girls. So if this was a sexually motivated crime, which it most likely was, things did not go as this guy planned. And so it didn't happen, as far as least that they can tell anyway. So that was the crime scene that came out during the trial.
That's so sad.
Kind of leaves you don't really know what to say.
Right.
Because they're kids. Like, I don't... It's just, what kind of monster does that to children? You know what I mean? Like, who does anything to children? But that much just depravity is just not something you can wrap your mind around. It's just, I don't know. It leaves you speechless, really.
Disgusting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You just don't know what to say. All right, we've gotten through the crime scene and the murders, what we know happened. And now that everyone is back with us, we're going to tie it all back to the gun that they found in Alan's home. So at the crime scene, they found an unfired bullet on the ground between the girls' bodies. This bullet was the prosecution's second most significant piece of evidence. This bullet found was unfired and belonged to a .40 caliber. The prosecution argued that this bullet would match that of Richard Allen's gun, the one that they had seized in the search of his home. Now, this being an unfired bullet, all they can say is, yeah, it could have been from his gun. But there was no way to say for sure that it came from it, because an unfired bullet does not have the identifying marks on it like a fired bullet has. So what happened was that the state's firearm examiner testified that she had compared cartridges fired from Alan's gun to the unspent bullet and concluded that they were a match. So, according to the prosecution, this was pretty powerful evidence for the jury to have. There was also an analysis done of the bridge guy, which leads us to the third point of the prosecution's case. A witness said she saw a man that day in a blue jacket and jeans, and they were both muddy and bloody. Why the fuck she didn't call the police? I don't know. I see somebody come out of the woods covered in mud and blood. Clearly something is wrong.
Yeah, clearly he did something.
Yeah, either he did something or he's hurt. Like, somebody call for help or something.
Yeah.
I will never understand those people. So this description that she gave fits the man seen in the video. But the question that remained was, is bridge guy Richard Allen? According to the state, it was. This is partly based on a video clip of Bridge Guy saying, go down the hill. So a voice print had been conducted, and according to a state's police officer who testified, he said that following his analysis, he was able to identify Alan as the man who belonged to that voice. Next, the state would offer up Alan's own confession that he was Bridge Guy and the murderer as evidence of his guilt. Originally, the prosecution stated that Alan had confessed a total of 61 times while he was incarcerated to being the one that had committed these murders. This number was probably exaggerated for the purpose of the trial, but he did confess, like, a lot while he was incarcerated to several different people. It's like, once these guys get arrested, they can't not talk.
Right. That's what it seems like.
Like, every one of them, as soon as they get handcuffs on, they're talking all about it, telling anybody that'll fucking listen. Just, Jesus. So now, as a normal part of trials, the defendant undergoes a mental health evaluation. And that was no different here. Alan's treating psychiatrist, Dr. Walla, said that Alan confessed to her that he had, in fact, committed the crimes. She said that Alan claimed he had intended to sexually assault the girls and led them to a private place off the trail to do so. But he was interrupted by a passing van. So this is when he panicked, cut the girls' throats, then threw sticks on them and covered them up and fled the scene.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah. To support this testimony about the van, a local man named Brad Weber testified that he had crossed that area in his white van around 2:30 p.m. on the day of the murders. More damning were the phone calls that Alan had made to his wife and mother. During these, he said that he did it, that he was sorry. This was all despite his wife and mother saying they didn't believe it, they didn't think he did it, and that they didn't know why he was saying it. All of these calls are recorded because he was in jail. So nobody can say these calls did not happen.
Oh, he did it while he was in jail?
Yep. After he was arrested, he made these calls to his wife and his mother saying that he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, no, wow. I don't know why you're saying that. You would never do something like that. Bitch, he's telling you he did it.
Right.
Like, why are you going to sit and tell him, no, don't say that. You would never do that. Like, you're dumb. Like, I get not wanting to believe someone you love would do that, but he is flat out telling you he did it.
Oh, right.
Just, I don't get it. So now the prosecution closed out their case by saying they had the bullet, they had the confessions, and a brutal double murder, and it all pointed to Richard Allen. And now it was the defense's turn, and they put up one hell of a case. Like, they were public defense attorneys, but they did a pretty damn good job in this case. Not gonna lie.
That's a surprise.
Exactly. They did their fucking job. So for anyone that doesn't know, in a trial, all of the burden is on the prosecution. They have to prove the person did it. While the defense, all they have to do is plant doubt. They just need one juror to have doubt, and that's it. And that is what they were out to do in this trial. And they tried to plant it on every single front that the prosecution threw out. So the defense started with what they called shoddy police work. They pointed to how the crime scene wasn't properly secured and stated that it was trampled all over. They went on to say evidence had not been collected properly, nor was it processed correctly. There were shoe prints not processed, and those branches that were laid over the girls were not taken into evidence. Instead, they were moved to the side and left behind. They tried to cast doubt on the bullet, saying that there were no photos taken that showed the bullet was there to begin with, making it seem as though it was faulty evidence. They said with all the law enforcement and people there, one of them could have simply dropped it.
Damn.
Yeah. Then they go on to point out that several key witnesses that had spoken with police were lost, and the recordings were quote unquote accidentally recorded over. Which these were all done early on in the case. And according to the defense, they were also potential suspects. And now they didn't have those interviews to look back over. Then we move to the hair that was found in Abby's hand, which was not tested until 2024.
Why so long?
No idea. I wondered the same thing. No one, from what I could see, no one ever says why it took them so long to test it. This hair did not match Richard Allen. Instead, it belonged to her sister.
Belongs to her sister?
Yep, yep. But honestly, it really doesn't change.
How did her sister's hair get in her hand?
Well, if you remember, that she lived, Abby lived with her sister. They were also in her sister's car that day. That hair can easily be explained to why it's there. It could have transferred when she hugged her sister goodbye. It was,
yeah.
I mean, it could have came from the inside of her sister's car. And, you know, when she's grabbing at her clothes or whatever, could have just simply gotten in her hand. But it doesn't look good for the investigating police who hadn't tested the hair a lot sooner. Looks really bad.
Yeah.
So next, the defense would go on to attack the other major points the prosecution had laid out. They start with Bridge Guy. No one had ever pointed to Richard Allen being Bridge Guy. No one had ever pointed to Richard being the voice on the audio clip or the man seen in the photo or the video that they had released. Not one finger was pointed at Richard. And then that voice analysis, well, that was conducted by a police officer who had heard the audio from the bridge, then listened to hundreds of voice messages from Allen, and came to a conclusion that they were the same voice.
Mm.
So there's no scientific evidence in that method at all.
That's wild.
Yeah. So now we move on to the bullet, which the defense team calls the magic bullet. Now, remembering that the state expert concluded that this was a match to Richard's gun, but in her first test, the expert ejected 6 different bullets from Allen's firearm. Which makes sense when comparing them, because the bullet found at the scene had not been fired, it had been ejected, just came out. But the markings in the lab didn't initially match those on the bullet found at the scene. This was when she decided to fire some of the rounds and then compare them. But that's not really scientific either, to compare an unspent bullet to one that has been spent. That doesn't make sense.
Right.
Then the defense pointed to the fact that no other firearms were used as a comparison. She only compared this bullet to the gun that belonged to Richard Allen. So I'm going to elaborate here a little bit. So a fired bullet has marks that are called imprinted marks, which are left behind from the gun barrel that fired it. Each gun, no matter whether it's the same gun, different gun, same caliber, or whatever, each individual gun leaves behind its own significant, unique imprinted marks. None are the same. An unspent bullet will also have markings left behind on it, but these are called rifling marks, and they're left by the gun when it's ejected. So when you look at a spent bullet, those markings, those grooves that are on the edges are going to be totally different than the markings on an ejected gun. So yes, this could have belonged to Allen, but because it was not fired, it could have 100% belonged to someone else. It just had to belong to a gun that carried this caliber. That's it.
Right.
Then the prosecution presented evidence that was meant to cast doubt on the prosecution's timeline of the murders. So Libby's phone had recorded the video at the bridge at 2:13 p.m., but the phone stopped moving about 20 minutes later around 2:32 p.m. According to the prosecution, the girls had been murdered by this time, or right around this time. Then Allen fled. The defense, who brought their own digital expert, who testified that Libby's phone had been accessed by headphones being plugged into the headphone jack at 5:45 p.m., just seconds after a phone call had come in. Then the headphones were removed at 10:32 p.m. Yeah, I don't know how in the world you can tell that on a phone, but apparently this guy could.
That's what I was going to say.
Like, apparently there's a record somewhere in your phone each time you plug something in. I don't know, but he figured it out, according to this guy. So this puts a huge hole in the state's timeline, because according to them, the girls were dead by 2:30 that day. It is entirely possible that someone had used her phone, but according to the defense, it's just as possible that the girls were taken somewhere else, held, and then murdered, and then brought back to the bridge where they were dumped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't really make sense, but it's possible.
Right.
So lastly, the defense would address what was really the strongest evidence against Allen. And that was all the confessions. They said his confessions were made under duress, and after he had apparently suffered a massive mental breakdown and had a history of depression and anxiety, and he had been placed in solitary confinement for like 13 months. And according to them, this was when he started to confess. They also said during this time, Allen had begun to demonstrate extreme behavior that was consistent with psychosis, like banging his head on the wall repeatedly. He ate part of his Bible, washed his face in the toilet, shit like that.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This fucking guy's got some problems. But according to Dr. Walla, these behaviors were not psychotic. He was faking it. While the defense experts said Allen was clearly psychotic by pointing to the extremity and the length of these behaviors. They said, yeah, sure, some people can fake these things, but Allen's were so extreme and so prolonged that it was obvious he was not faking. The defense then elicited from Dr. Walla, while she was on the stand, that she is a true crime fan and that she had researched Richard Allen in the case outside of her normal work, and that she had also engaged with other people online about the case before and during his treatment.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. She had apparently also used her personal computer to access the DOC's database to gain information about the case, which is illegal as fuck.
Right.
They were also able to get out of Dr. Walla that she had occasionally shared information from her research on the case.
Not looking good for her.
Lady, I do not want you to take the stand if I ever have a criminal case, okay? Stay the fuck right out of my case. Like, no. So this testimony really hit the prosecution's case hard, because now people are wondering if she had fed Richard Allen information and bits of evidence that he would later repeat in his confession.
That makes sense.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know about this. So it's very clear that the defense did their job in this case. In my opinion, they did a damn good job on rebutting the prosecution's case.
They really did.
Yeah. Like, if I need a defense attorney, these are your guys, okay? Don't go out and do some shit to need a defense attorney, but I'm just saying. Because they did their fucking job. But would it be enough to get Richard Allen an acquittal? In the end, after a 4-week trial and 4 days of deliberation, the jury came back with a verdict. Richard Allen was guilty of the double murder of Abigail Williams and Liberty German.
They still found him guilty?
Yep.
Wow.
So, that defense did a damn good job, but the evidence was too strong. So, everyone in the country was filled with emotion after the verdict was announced. There was shock, despair, sadness, and even relief. This case had the public divided. There were those that held on to grave doubts about Allen's guilt, and the rest knew without a doubt that he was guilty, and the system got it right. Richard Allen's sentencing took place on December 20th of 2024. And as normal, their families gave impact statements before Judge Gall handed down her sentence. I'm going to read each of those statements along with what Judge Gall had said that day. Each of these are kind of lengthy, and some may want to skip past and not hear them. I encourage everyone to listen to each one. Each of these statements are heartfelt pleas and words from those that are forever impacted by Richard Allen's choices, and I feel that their words should be heard because they matter. So each of these, I'm going to try to get through without choking up. Okay. I don't know if that's going to happen. But everyone, bear with me as we read through these. So the first to speak was Libby's mother, Carrie Timmons. In part, her statement read, quote, "That day changed all of our lives in so many ways forever. Libby was always my go-to for advice. She somehow would have known exactly what to say in this situation, and I have no doubt that she is currently holding my pen. I had no problem getting the word out when he was just bridge guy and had not been identified, but I honestly don't know how to process the fact that a husband, a father, is capable of the horrendous acts of brutality inflicted upon our beautiful children. I was totally blind to the fact that such evil actually existed. I don't know which is worse, knowing or not knowing." End quote. Next was Libby's cousin, Josh Lank. And he said, quote, "I would like to start off by thanking the prosecution team and all of the law enforcement who was involved in this case for the countless hours of your guys' time that was dedicated to this case. And I can't thank each of you enough. You can tell from the beginning that this case was very important to them, and they did everything they could to find justice for those two beautiful girls. I would also like to thank our little community. You guys have been so kind to our family with the love and support you have shown us. From painting the town teal and purple to feeding us every day throughout the trial. I seriously can't thank you guys enough. Our town may be little, but this goes to show that in time of need, our community pulls together. Libby is my cousin. But the bond we had together was a brother and sister bond that nobody could break. When we were younger, we were together almost every day. It was always Kelsey, Libby, my brother, and I. We would ride the bus to my grandma's after school, and you would never know what kind of trouble we would get into. Libby was one of a kind. She would give the shirt off her back to someone that she thought needed it more than her. She was always trying to find ways to help people and make things easier on everyone. She truly was going to do great things in life. I will forever remember Libby by the amazing memories we made and not how Richard Allen left them on February 13th, 2017. He took so much away from both those girls. They had amazing lives ahead of them. The pain he has put both our families through could never be forgiven or forgotten. The things we had to see, we will never be able to unsee, all because of him. This man has made my life and my family's lives a living hell for the past 8 years. Now it's time for his life to be living in hell. 23 hours a day, no communication, isolation from everyone. That is what this man's life is going to be like until he dies. Richard Allen took two amazing little girls with so much life ahead of them, for my family and the Williams family way too soon. And for his action, I hope and pray he lives the rest of his life thinking of the mistakes he made that day. I would like to leave you with this. God doesn't have a place for sick, twisted-minded individuals like Richard Allen. The devil has a special place in hell for him, and I hope the prison community can get him there quicker than the sentencing. He is a dead man walking. Judge Gall, I ask you that you take into consideration the max sentencing with no parole. There should be no way this man has a chance to get out of prison and be able to have the ability to do what he did again. Granting him no parole will solidify that. End quote.
That gave me chills.
Yep. And he got it right. Dead man fucking walking.
Yep.
So the next to speak was Libby's grandfather. He thanked the prosecution, the investigation team. He said to Judge Gull, quote, Honorable Judge Fran Gull, we appreciate your firm, fair guidance and direction. Your ability to ward off all the unnecessary noise and acts that were deployed during this process. Thank you for standing firm and staying focused on what needed to be done. I request you provide the maximum sentence allowed by a justice system, and whatever that sentence is, would also have no possibility of parole. There is no parole available to our girls. For this, I will never forget. End quote. He then thanks his family and welcomes them for being there and loving and how strong they are and how they will continue to grow forward. To the defense, he said, quote, I understand the role you needed to play, but I cannot connect the ways of our legal system to allow so many things to interfere with the truth and facts to simply be brought before a jury. I cannot imagine our forefathers ever envisioned the attempts to suppress and divert the facts would ever be part of our justice system. One should reflect and review their position to support truth, justice, and the American way. Your inept ability to protect some of those most personal facts in this case, the crime scene photos, and making statements that you really didn't care they were out there. My family will forever have to explain how these were available for people to search. What do I say to my kids, grandchildren, great-grandchildren? What will you tell your grandkids? I hope you tell them the truth. I surely will. For this, I will never forget. End quote. From there, he spoke directly to Richard Allen himself. He said, quote, I will never understand how you could have conducted such an atrocity. You killed my granddaughter nearly 8 years ago and have only thought of yourself. Your attempts of self-preservation are a result of how you really are. Once you committed this crime, you could have been a man, stood up, and taken accountability, but you didn't. At any time during these proceedings, you could have stood up and taken responsibility, but you didn't, and were only concerned about yourself and tried to get away with murder. Actions always speak louder than words. By being so selfish, you continue to punish and hurt my family. For this, I will never forget. Your act of murder has tested my faith. I am still not ready to provide forgiveness, but I am able, but blah. When I am able to, it will be for my own faith and conscience, not yours. For this, I will never forget. I've never felt such hatred and should not be this way towards another human being. What you have done has impacted so many people's lives. Will we heal with the help of our pastor? I'm lucky to have a great family and will enjoy the rest of my life helping and watching all of them grow from our kids to our great-grandchildren. This is something you will not get to take away, and you will never get to experience such joy and love as what my family has. Lastly, hope the rest of your days are spent in as much fear as the girls had to experience the last part of their lives, and hope those moments haunt you the rest of your days. You deserve no better. Now is the time to stand up and take accountability. Put a stop to any future attempts to appeal so we can let Libby rest in peace. End quote.
Wow.
Is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And is rough. So after Mr. Patty, Libby's grandmother, Betty Patty, spoke, which I love that name. Betty Patty. It's like the best name ever.
Mm-hmm.
She spoke. She spoke to Judge Gull first. And she said, quote, where does one start? How does one explain the effect of how one choice a person makes has on an entire family or generations to come? I don't think one can really explain and do it justice. There are not enough words in our language that begins to paint the picture of the grief we live with each and every day. Richard Allen was an adult, and he should be held accountable for the choices he made on February 13th, 2017. He chose not to go to lunch with his mom and sister. Instead, he chose to drink beer for liquid courage. He chose to lay in wait for his victims, to order them down the hill. He had the opportunity to let Libby and Abby go when the white van drove by, but he chose not to do so. Instead, he chose to take them across the creek where he viciously murdered them. making sure they were dead before he went home and continued his life. Richard Allen viciously and heartlessly stole the choice to live from Abby and Libby that day. He was a coward and didn't want to be held accountable for his heinous choices and actions. So he just killed them and went home. I guess in his eyes, he was nice enough to make sure they were dead before leaving so they wouldn't suffer. A few days later, he developed photos for the family that would be used at Libby's funeral. He stood there, watching the family members as they struggled to keep their composure while dealing with an insurmountable grief and preparing for the unthinkable that lay ahead, not blinking an eye, with no remorse. I wonder what he was thinking. Our lives turned upside down that day, never to be the same again. Abby and Libby, two young teens with their entire futures ahead of them. I just want to choke up.
Yeah.
Ugh. They never got the opportunity to make their marks in the world. He stole that from them. Libby never got to go to prom, graduate, go on dates, go to college, get married, or start a family. She never got to be the best aunt ever. He robbed us all. The world was robbed of what could have been. All the while, he went on living. He was able to walk his daughter down the aisle and give her away at her wedding. I wonder, did he think of the girls at all while walking her down the aisle? Our families will never get the privilege of watching Libby or Abby walk down that aisle. He took that away from us. The impact of Richard Allen's choices made that day as haunted. May that day has haunted our families for almost 8 years and continues even now. Because of choices he made and subsequent arrest, he was appointed two lawyers to defend him. Those lawyers have done nothing but twist the knife around and around in our wounds Richard caused that day. Because of one lawyer's sloppiness, sealed crime scene photos of Libby's naked and mutilated body were left unattended, allowing images to be taken and spread around to people on the internet. As recent as this week, those crime scene photos are still being shared on the internet for no good reason or entertainment by many. Sharing those photos changes nothing. It doesn't solve the crime. It doesn't bring the girls back. So now, because of Richard Allen's choices that day and his lawyer's sloppiness, the impact has now become generational for us. One day, when Libby's nieces or nephews decide they want to learn more about their Aunt Libby, they may be faced with those horrible crime scene photos that were so carelessly taken care of. I wonder if his lawyer would have been so careless with those photos if they were photos of one of his children. Would he still have felt no accountability because he was snockered? And then you have the other lawyer who sat in the judge's chambers and stating he really didn't care that the photos had been leaked. I wonder if he would have been so callous and uncaring if those were photos of his children's naked and mutilated body being shared. Would he still not care? No. These professionals are allowed to claim no accountability for their actions and move on to the next case, disrespecting and devaluing the next victim and their families. Meanwhile, our families are left picking up the pieces because of their choices and actions. In the end, all these choices made by the defense team, the fallout our families now have to live with falls directly on the head of Richard Allen because of the choices he made on February 13th, 2017. I could go on and on about what we lost that day, but it would change nothing. The deafening silence in the house, the milestones missed, the grandbabies never to sit on our laps, the impact Libby and Abby would have had on so many lives. Talking about it won't bring them back to us. Nothing in this world can change the outcome of that horrific day. No matter how hard we wish or pray them back, they are gone forever. Only Richard Allen is making a different choice. That day could have changed it. Their lives were in the balance. He chose to kill Abby and Libby. Their lives mattered. He is the one responsible for all of this. All I can hope for now is that Richard Allen will be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law for what he did that day. His sentence needs to reflect not only of murdering the girls, but also serving time for each day of life those girls still had in front of them. For every feat they may have accomplished. I feel he should serve one day behind bars for each future day he robbed from those girls. I hope he is not held in a single occupancy cell since his attorneys feel it would be detrimental to his health. I hope he is ordered to reside in general population where he can have the human interaction he so craves and needs. Last of all, I hope he lives each day of the rest of his life living with the same fear he bestowed on Abby and Libby the last hour of their lives. I hope the choices he made on February 13th, 2017 come back to haunt him, giving him no peace. I realize I should not feel this way, but I can't stop these feelings. I hope God can see my heart and can forgive me. I hope Richard Allen's new relationship with God will finally compel him to do the right thing and stop this nightmare from continuing any longer. Not only for our families, but as his as well. He needs to do what he knows God would want him to do. I hope he finally gives the girls the respect they deserve. Give them back the dignity he so callously took from them.
Wow.
Her grandmother then goes on to say, I live every day with the burden of the choice I made that fateful day. I can never change the results of my choice of letting the girls go to the trails. And I take responsibility for that. What about you, Richard Allen? Will you ever own up and take responsibility for the choices you made that day? Only you can stop this nightmare for all the families. You can make that choice. When does it ever stop? As recent as yesterday, the defense continued playing their games. They know law enforcement investigated the third-party theories with never being able to place any of those people at the trails that day. They continue their charades at the expense of Abby and Libby. We don't even want to go there, talking about hardships caused to the family. Richard Allen is not the victim. End quote. Because in their closing statements, the prosecution went as far to talk about the hardship that all of this put on Richard Allen's family. Yeah. Yep. They painted him as a victim in all of this.
Wow.
Yep. Abby's grandmother talked. I don't have like direct quotes from her statement. But she talked about how it was a day of sadness. You know, that her family was not going to be going home and celebrating, that they were heartbroken, that it was impossible to write, that Abby was the first and only child of her firstborn son. She said Abby's most popular phrase was, do you need help? She said that it was terrifying for her to think of what happened to Abby that day. She said it's so terrifying that it wakes her up in the middle of the night. She's terrified of what Abby saw and felt and heard in that last hour of life. She talks about how she also realizes that Abby would have been humiliated during the trial, that she was a very modest girl. She didn't show off, yet there were photos of her mutilated body everywhere. In her most vulnerable state. And there were people sharing those photos. So after that was Abby's grandfather. He just, you know, he starts saying he wasn't an articulate man, that he was a bolt and wrench kind of guy. He said for those last 7 years, their daily lives had been a very difficult process. That the loss of Abby was like losing a limb that would never grow back and the wound that scabbed over, but never heals. And instead gets infected. He said he can't count the thousands and thousands and thousands of times that he spent thinking about what happened to Abby in that last hour and how the girls ended up the way they did. He said his most horrifying thoughts, and he's not sure that his family will ever get back to normal following this. He's also in pain about what her Delphi classmates had to go through, and he does not believe that they will ever recover. Because still to the day of the trial, and all of this is being said, some of them were still being seen in therapy. He said directly to Richard Allen. Yeah. Because they were very popular girls. And they were old enough that it was a very significant impact. He said directly to Richard Allen, quote, you stole our future, but you will not take away our memories. How could you go through your daily routine when we can't get through ours? Richard Allen, you say you found God. God was not lost. God was here before Earth was created, and he was there on February 13th. The girls knew God. I have no doubt that they are in a good place. God gives us a choice, and you made a decision. And your decision is beyond my comprehension. But Richard Allen, you can set the record straight. Following each of these statements, the prosecuting attorney made a statement. Then Judge Gull spoke. And she spoke directly to Richard Allen. Quote, I've presided over some of the most hideous cases, and this is right up there
with the most hideous. What you have done is astounding, and it has made an extraordinary impact affecting so many people. She then explained that the minimum is 45 years and the maximum is 65 years. And she said, quote, "You rank with extraordinary impact to so many. Richard Allen, you sit here and you roll your eyes at me while I say this, and you have rolled your eyes at me repeatedly during this trial. So, I give you 65 years for count three and 65 years for count four. They are to run consecutively. Thus, 130 years. You have had 786 days served already." So, on December 20th, 2024, following all of this and being given credit for time served, Richard Allen was sentenced to serve a little over 129 years for the murders of Abby and Libby. So for a man that is now 52 years old, this is a death sentence.
Good. Good.
I have no doubt that he will appeal this conviction. And although I myself and many other people believe that he is the man responsible, he does, in my opinion, have some strong points for an appeal. So we'll just have to keep an eye out for any updates that are to come. Hopefully he chooses not to appeal and he just takes his sentence so that way it can be done and families don't have to go through this again and they can begin to heal in some way. But I don't see that happening.
Right.
I feel that there will be an appeal at some point.
Oh, I'm sure.
Today, Libby would be would be 22, turning 23 in December, and Abby would be getting ready to turn 22 in June. They no doubt would still be best friends and sharing every milestone together. Instead, the girls are forever frozen in time at 14 and 13 years old, never getting to experience all that life could offer them. And that, for now, is the end of the case.
That was a tough one.
Oh, yeah.
The speeches were rough.
Yeah. And I watched the whole thing. I watched the trial, all of it. I did the research, typed it up. It was still rough. It was still hard for me.
Yeah. It's always sad when it's kids.
I'm just glad that they finally got an ending. Because for a long time, it looked like it was going to stay unsolved.
Right.
Oh, okay. We have another would you rather.
Okay.
Ended on a high note. And it's a good one. So, would you rather know the whole story of what happened to Amelia Earhart or D.V. Cooper?
Ooh, that's a good one. And I can't pick both?
Nope. You gotta pick one.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Oh, yeah. I already know my answer.
I want to say both.
You can't pick both. You gotta pick one or the other.
D.V. Cooper.
That's mine!
Really?
I don't think that motherfucker died. He went on and lived a long life.
Yeah, that was a good one.
The next one is even better. This is going to be hard for you to pick, too.
Okay.
Which real haunted doll would you rather own? Annabelle or Chucky?
Oh, that is a hard one. I'm going to say Chucky because he's more talkative.
See, I just want Chucky because I can lock in a box
and right. He
can kill me.
But Annabelle, even though she's locked in a box, since she's on tour right now.
That bitch is missing.
On tour.
Did you see that? Missing.
Yeah, she's missing. I think I'm going to stick with Chucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, because how the hell is she missing?
I don't know. But she can stay missing because her next stop was supposed to be in Chicago. She can stay missing.
Yes, she can.
Yep. We don't need that shit over here.
No, we're good.
Mm-mm. A plantation burnt down. What was it? Like 10 inmates escaped?
Yeah. No, it was 8, I thought.
It might have been 8. It was 8 or 10, okay? One of the two.
Yeah. Yeah, I got goosebumps thinking about that. I'm good. Yep. No,
and then other? Because she's been to 3 places, and each one, something has happened. The plantation burnt down. 8 or 10... inmates escaped. And then what was the other thing that would happen?
I can't remember. But how did she just up and come missing?
Let me see if I can find it.
And the crazy part is that she's not even the doll that they have in the movie. She's a Raggedy Ann doll.
Right, exactly. She looks totally different. Yeah.
Yeah. She That's looks why like I had Raggedy Ann dolls.
See, they're creepy to me.
Really? I had one when I was little.
I don't know. They creep me out. They've always creeped me out.
Well, I bet they creep you out now.
Oh, yeah. Now they definitely do. I was into Lamb Chop. I liked Lamb Chop.
I remember Lamb Chop.
Oh, I love so many people don't remember him.
Really?
Yeah. How does nobody remember Lamb Chop? I loved Lamb Chop.
Yeah, I remember.
And Felix Lamb Chop. The Cat. Oh, loved that show.
I remember Felix the Cat.
I don't know why, because the cat never talked.
I don't remember. Yeah.
Cat never talked. Lamb Chop was a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
Those were my favorite two shows. No idea why. Okay, I'm trying to find. Which is on my list. We're going to cover Annabelle, okay? And the story behind her and, you know, the what she's supposed to be haunted by and all that. We're gonna cover that.
But that's going to be a good one.
I think we're going to wait until they find her ass.
Yeah, let's not talk her up.
No, thank you, Annabelle. You can stay your ass in New Orleans.
Yeah, sweetheart. Stay where you're at.
That's what the problem is. Annabelle's fucking lost. Now she's fucking with our shit.
Who's Annabelle?
That fucking haunted ass doll that's missing. You know, from like the movie.
Oh.
Yeah, she's missing.
Since you're not...
Like, how the fuck do you lose track of a haunted doll that is in a box? The fuck? Why would you take it out of the museum to begin with? Like Lorraine Warren said, do not ever move this doll. Don't do it. Leave her where she is. And what do these fucktards do?
I don't know what's wrong with it.
They move her. The fuck? Every time. She's on a world tour, mama. They took a demon-possessed doll on a fucking world tour.
Annabelle's not real.
Annabelle is real.
She isn't. New Orleans, a plantation burnt down.
Then?
While she was there. Then where'd she go after that? It was New Orleans, fucking, oh God. Was it Mississippi?
I can't remember.
Hang on, Mama. Don't go nowhere because I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
This fucking creepy ass damn doll. That's what's wrong. Annabelle is fucking with our shit right now. That's why we're having so many problems. It's her ass. I already checked it. It was junk. Yeah, that's why we're having so many problems, Mandy. Damn Annabelle.
Probably. Yep.
So first she was in, where did the house burn down at? Or the plantation, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Connecticut. Nope. She was in Connecticut originally. They took her from that museum, which they were told, do not move her from here. Don't do it. She is a demon-possessed doll. Okay? They moved her from there. There they went to New Orleans, right? A plantation burnt to the ground. Okay? Then from there, they went to San Antonio, Texas, where 10 fucking inmates escaped prison. Now the bitch is missing. You want to know where her next stop was?
What?
Chicago. No. Keep the bitch over there. She can stay missing. She can stay missing. Don't nobody need to go find her. That is why I would rather own Chucky. I'm good. No, thank you. Chucky, I can lock in a box and his ass can't get out.
Right.
Nope, I don't want no Annabelle doll. Anyway, before Annabelle fucks with our shit some more, we need to...
end this shit.
Yep. We've done had to restart recording 3 times. Nope.
We've never had to do that.
No, never. That's what I'm saying. That's what I told Mama. Annabelle is messing with our shit. She don't like us talking about her. So we're going to end it before she really messes with us.
Right.
We don't need that. Okay. I think that's it.
We'll
be back on Monday for our new episode. As always, you can find these pictures, the links, all of that on the Facebook page. Those will also be in the episode description. Give us a rate, a review. Don't forget to subscribe. so you get notifications when these new episodes air. Check out our TikTok, our Facebook account, so you can answer these would you rathers. And that's it. That's all we got for our bonus this month.
Whoop whoop.
Yay. Jazz hands. All right, guys, we hope you keep listening and remember to
watch for monsters
and don't kill people. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.